The Senate Select Committee hearings on Watergate. From CBS News in Washington, this is Neil Strausser with Hal Walker reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The witnesses today were the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, now the ambassador to Iran, Richard Helms, and one of his former deputies at the CIA, General Robert Cushman. And the subjects, whether the CIA improperly assisted the White House plumbers back in 1971, and whether the administration improperly attempted to enlist the CIA in a Watergate cover-up in 1972. But Hal Walker, I think perhaps both of us got as much bemused by this chance for a look inside the Central Intelligence Agency.
It was a rare view of this super-secret agency about which there's very little discussion in public from people who are in a position to know, and certainly we did get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, from Richard Helms, who's been associated with that agency in one fashion or another for the past 27 years, the last 7 years having been its director before taking the position as ambassador.
Well, we learned from General Cushman, for instance, that when Howard Hunt retired from the CIA, there was a little retirement party just like any other agency. We heard Helms tell us very seriously that the Watergate affair was an amateur's break-in.
And that if you're going to do breaking and entering and not get caught, he pointed out, it's the sort of thing that you've got to do, you've got to have a fair amount of training at and do it with some regularity.
And we heard there's some pride, too. There was a question of that wig that Howard Hunt supposedly showed up wearing when he went to see Dita Beard in the spring of 1972, an ill-fitting red wig, they said. Well, it's established that the CIA, while assisting Hunt in 1971, gave him a wig. But Helms pursued that question.
I've been told in recent times that the wig provided by the agency was a brunette wig. It was a dark hair, anyway. And that some of the agency technicians rather resented the fact that the red wig had been tied in with the CIA because it was such a lousy fit.
And there's some resentment of being reminded of failures. Helms able to explain why he was so quickly able to tell H.R. Haldeman after the Watergate break-in that the CIA had no care at all about any exposure of the FBI that would expose any activities of the Bay of Pigs operation.
The Bay of Pigs is the rubric for a very unhappy event in the life of the CIA. It's been a dead cat that's been thrown at us over the years ever since. And therefore, it's one to which I'm likely to react, and react rather quickly, for the simple reason that the Bay of Pigs was long since over. The problems arising from it had been liquidated. I was well aware of this, and I didn't care what any investigation had to do with the Bay of Pigs. It could have gotten into anybody involved with it or without it or above it or below it. I didn't care.
I'm not as erudite as Richard Helms. I looked up rubric and roughly defined, it's a title written in red.
There's a lot of human insights in the testimony this morning, and while we're back on the subject of the area of 1971, Helms admits that it was he who agreed to have that psychological profile run on Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers figure, and now he says in retrospect that he really thinks it was not a good idea, but he agreed to it at the time.
But to get up to the events of immediately following the Watergate break-in, at the June 23rd meeting with H.R. Haldeman, John Ehrlichman, and Helms' then-deputy, General Vernon Walters.
Pointing out that's exactly 1 week after the break-in of Watergate.
Of course, the questions were put, whether the CIA could possibly have been involved. And what develops is there is some disagreement between Helms and his deputy, Walters. Walters wrote up memos of that several days after the event, and his memo had H.R. Haldeman saying, it is the president's wish that you do something. That's not the way Helms remembered it.
Now, there was some question this morning as to whether or not the president's name was invoked during the June 23rd, 1972 meeting, and I believe it's your best recollection that it was not. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. General Walters, as I recall the language in the memorandum, said something about it is the president's wish. I did not recall that language having been used.
When, for the first time, did you take note of your difference with the General Walters memorandum?
I believe we discussed that even at the time, as to just exactly how this had been put.
So that was one instance in where you saw fit to...
I'm afraid there is a disagreement even now between us as to just how this was worded.
Although Helms said at the time it didn't seem that important, since it was simply an internal memo that Cushman had written to remind himself. I mean, Walters had written to remind himself of what had happened, and so no effort was made to change or expunge that reference.
Another difference developed, too, because Helms said he differed a bit with Walters' memory on just what day John Dean said what in the days following that June 23rd meeting. But they did agree on one thing in regard to that June 23rd meeting.
Was any question directed at you or General Walters as to whether further investigation by the CIA might uncover assets or operations of the CIA?
You mean further investigation of the FBI?
Excuse me, FBI. Might uncover assets or operations of the CIA in Mexico?
I don't recall that this point was ever put to either of us in the form of a question. It was my recollection, or it is my recollection, that General Walters was asked to go and speak to Mr. Gray about this because there was the possibility that it might run into CIA operations. I was not asked whether it would or it wouldn't.
The clear implication here, of course, is that the CIA figures were asked to go to Patrick Gray and tell him to curtail what might prove to be an embarrassing or even more serious investigation into the Watergate issues. Now, both John Ehrlichman and H.R. Haldeman have testified that no such directives were given.
And the differences in memory between Walters and Helms may be somewhat important, because Walters, who will testify tomorrow, seems in his memoranda, at least, to be more critical of Haldeman and Ehrlichman in this regard. Well, then we got to General Robert Cushman, who was the first deputy to serve Helms in the course of his service under the Nixon administration.
And who is now serving as the U.S. Marine Commandant, and he cut a U.S. Marine Commandant figure, I think, sitting at the witness table. Heavy set, but ramrod straight and fairly direct in his response to most questions.
And getting to an important answer very early.
Did there come a time around July 7, 1971, when you received a call from the White House requesting CIA assistance in a White House project?
Yes, sir. On the 7th of July, 1971, I received a call from Mr. Ehrlichman, who stated, as best I can remember the words, that Howard Hunt had been hired as a consultant to the White House on security matters, that he would be coming to pay me a visit, and could I lend him a hand.
And then he said Howard Hunt did come on July 22nd of that year, a conversation that he taped recorded because Hunt wanted to be alone in the office, and Cushman said he wanted to be able to take notes on it later at least.
And lend him a hand he did. Cushman admits that he had given to E. Howard Hunt a tape recorder, a miniature tape recorder, a miniature camera, that wig that we've discussed already, and
a voice
disguiser, which he said was to have been used for a one-time interview with a person of, quote, uncertain ideology, whatever that means.
But then the demands got too extreme, he said. Hunt wanted a CIA secretary transferred back from Paris, and there was more.
Now, did Mr. Hunt also request that he be given a New York address and phone services in New York?
Yes, sir. And this was when we decided that these requests were clearly escalating into improper requests, in that they would involve CIA people. He wanted an office, and he wanted the telephone to be monitored as an answering service would. When he wasn't there. And this, so to speak, was just too much. And I called up Mr. Ehrlichman, told him we couldn't accede to these type of requests, that I thought Mr. Hunt, was not exercising proper judgment, and that therefore I passed the word on.
Now, Cushman was very positive when he told the committee today that it was Ehrlichman who called him in the first place to ask for assistance for Hunt, but he wasn't all that certain. He testified at the beginning of this year, when the federal prosecutors began to look into the CIA assistance, and John Ehrlichman challenged his memory on that.
Well, John Ehrlichman apparently called him, or at least had him called up by the man who is now director of the CIA, William Colby, to say that Ehrlichman did not recall having made that particular telephone call, and perhaps Cushman's memory was a little fuzzy.
And despite evidence in the transcript of the recorded conversation with Howard Hunt that Ehrlichman had indeed called him, he took all names out of a memo to Ehrlichman, said he couldn't recall who had made the original request for assistance for Hunt.
But then it was strange when Schlesinger took over the agency, going through the files, he found notes of a meeting shortly after, right around that time, in which Ehrlichman's name was very prominent, and this again jogged General Cushman's memory, and once again he did eventually swear that it was in fact John Ehrlichman who had made that original phone call.
But Assistant Counsel James Hamilton was curious about why Cushman had responded in the way he did, taking names out of a second memorandum that he wrote to Ehrlichman.
Is it your testimony that Mr. Ehrlichman put no pressure at all on you to have his name removed?
No, sir.
General Cushman, in your press conference that you had when you came back from Europe, you stated at page 19 that you tore up the first memo at Mr. Ehrlichman's request. And did Mr. Ehrlichman make a request to you that the first memo be torn up and that a second memorandum be substituted?
No, I would say that that is an inaccurate phrasing. He didn't ask me to tear it up. In fact, I guess he kept the original, far as I know, but I tore up the copy and when I wrote the new memo on the 10th of January, 1973.
Cushman said it was unusual. He wouldn't use the word extraordinary to be asked to render CIA assistance to Howard Hunt, a White House employee. And he was asked about another activity of the CIA in that same period.
Is it the normal course, from your knowledge and experience, for the CIA to prepare a profile on an American citizen?
No, sir. It would be unusual.
Can you think of another instance where this has been done that can be revealed?
Well, my accounting would not be exhaustive, of course, but during the 3 years I was there, I don't recall any other being made on an American.
And I take it that this procedure is usually reserved for foreign leaders.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
As we saw, you were sitting in the hearing room watching these witnesses. There's quite a contrast between Richard Helms and Robert Cushman.
Well, in demeanor, Richard Helms was a very elegant, soft-spoken man who looked kind of embarrassed about being there in the first place and kind of introverted in a way, whereas Cushman, as Hal pointed out earlier, had the military bearing, more forward man, and didn't seem to be as upset about his position.
Traditionally, the deputy director of the CIA has been a military man, and there seems to be some suspicion on the part of committee members that the White House intentionally worked with the deputy directors, Cushman first and Walters later, first because they are military men used to following orders.
You might also point out, Neil, that Cushman is a longtime associate of Richard Nixon, having worked for him at the White House when Nixon was vice president.
It is also pointed out in the transcript of that phone conversation between Cushman and Hunt that he was also an old friend of John Ehrlichman's. And there seems to be no doubt, by the way, in reading this transcript, that it was in fact Ehrlichman who first called Cushman to ask for that he give Hunt help and assistance.
But Cushman allowed himself those several months of uncertainty.
Yes, more CIA tomorrow, isn't there?
More CIA. Vernon Walters, another former deputy director of the CIA, and we'll be hearing from him tomorrow.
A 60-page opening statement by former acting FBI director L. Patrick Gray tomorrow.
The Senate Select Committee hearings on Watergate, part of CBS News, continuing radio coverage of the Watergate hearings. With Leslie Stahl and Hal Walker, I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News, Washington.